Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C., that's about to get hammered by Hurricane Sandy.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. Looking forward to another show. Rex, hope the East Coast survives, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
We'll see. Maybe. We'll see. I find it interesting, Tex.
That, maybe it'll flush D.C. clean. Who knows?
Well, it's definitely going to flush D.C. Now, clean, I don't know. But I'll tell you, people are freaking out about this hurricane, cold front, snowstorm, perfect storm event. But it brings up a lot of really interesting things. Number one, the government, both federal and the local Virginia and Maryland governments, the courts, it's all shut down. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that's a pretty positive thing. I like it when the government shuts down. You remember back in the 90s when Gingrich is going to shut the government down because he can't get along with Clinton. It's absolutely terrible. I was excited about it. I'm like, yeah, shut the thing down. All they do is harm and damage. So screw it. Shut it down. So that's kind of a positive thing. And then the other thing I think is teaching us is that people tend to panic at the very last minute because, I went to the grocery store just because I wanted some beer. You know, it's not a necessity. I don't have to have it. You know, we stock up on supplies regularly, so I'm not really worried about not being able to get to the store or anything. But it was interesting to me because the place was crowded and the shelves were bare. And what it brings to light is that after 72 hours, if a truck doesn't come to your local convenience or grocery store, it will be empty. And I think that it highlights the fact that we Americans have gotten quite apathetic and quite lax because of the wonderful power of the free market to deliver the most goods to the most people in the most efficient and consistent manner. Now, some people say, well, you know, the rest of the world doesn't have these luxuries, so Americans are fat, lazy, and stupid. But what it tells me is that free markets work. Which begs the question, why are we trying to move away from that? Any idea, Tex?
Oh, because the government can do it better.
Ah.
You just look at history, the government's always better at this stuff.
Yes, the government's good at this.
They're terrible at it. but I always find it interesting, anytime there's like, speaking of sort of the life of luxury or the luxury problems that we tend to have, whenever there's some sort of storm that's threatening, you know, particularly on the East Coast, but to some extent, you know, kind of everywhere, people rush, you know, to the store and they go buy up all these goods, like, you know, 10,000 things of toilet paper, you know, because it's always like, what are you eating? You know, the storm's going to last, like, you know, I mean, a week at the most, if the power goes out, you know, I mean, what, you got to, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying, man, I don't have to go buy toilet paper all that often. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's like maybe a once every 2 to 3 month type purchase. You get the big one, you know, and then you're kind of good for a while. But people, they dash off and buy this. And then they're, oh, I got to go buy, you know, all this water, and I got to go buy all this, you know, Pop-Tarts and, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's. the storm, man. I mean, you know, it's a storm. But the thing is, I think people want to play that they're camping and all that kind of stuff. But you're right. What makes all this possible is the fact that, you know, you have a very efficient system for delivering these things. Actually, Walmart, they track storms coming in because they know that when storms come in, people buy a bunch of toilet paper, so they go deliver a whole bunch to all the places that are going to be affected by the storm, and then they go deliver Pop-Tarts because people buy Pop-Tarts for some reason, which I always thought was kind of stupid because aren't Pop-Tarts made either in a microwave or in a, you know, toaster? So
you can eat them cold. You can eat them cold.
Yeah, you can.
It's
I mean,
like
when I was a kid,
cooked.
I ate them cold, too. But yeah. I mean, I guess you could eat it cold, but it just seems like a very strange purchase to me.
I don't know about that. That's kind of a weird one. I mean, I figure if you're worried about, you know, not having the ability to cook and no refrigerator, you know, buy like dried fruits and nuts and canned beans and stuff because you can always cook those over an open fire. But beef jerky maybe. But it's funny.
I don't think
as you
planning
watch,
ahead is really going into it. See?
Exactly.
See,
that's what I was saying.
Purchase and the toilet paper purchase are tied in because you're never going to run out of toilet paper in a short period of time. I mean, unless you got problems. And then the Pop-Tart thing I don't think is very well thought out either. But anyway, it's just an excuse to eat Pop-Tarts, which they want to eat anyway. They're like, well, there's a storm, so I'll treat myself with some Pop-Tarts. Anyway,
yeah. My diet goes out the window because of the storm. Well, as we watch people running around, you know.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
You know, it brings to light certain things about our habits. First is we have this unconscious trust that things will be there. I'll flip the switch, power will come in. I flush the toilet, whatever's in there goes out. I open up the tap, water comes out, clean water. I go to the store, it has everything I need. It's open 24/7. The credit card machines work. Everything's wonderful. Where does this trust come from? People tend to think this trust comes from government because government keeps things running. You know, back in fascist, you know, when Mussolini rose to power in fascist Italy, it was, you know, well, he can get the trains to run on time. I mean, it's not government that does these things. If it was up to government, there wouldn't be any trains. We'd still be in horse and buggies right now. It's the free market. And what people have been conditioned to distrust is the free market. Now, what I find interesting, Tex, is that so-called conservatives, or at least Republicans, tend to favor the free market. They tend to favor capitalism, which is why they want a guy like Mitt Romney, who's a entrepreneur and a businessman, to run the government because he knows how markets work. Well, here's the problem with that. Number one, Mitt Romney is not an entrepreneur. Mitt Romney is a capitalist investor and not a free market capitalist. He's a corporatist capitalist. He believes in using government power to secure market share and profits. Excuse me. That's a problem. Number two, the same skills that are required in the business arena are not the same skills required in government administration because it is supposed to be a very focused and specific activity that is not market related. Because if it was market related, then the government wouldn't need to have a monopoly on the use of force. It would compete with the free market, which is not the case. It is designed to do those things which are enumerated by you, the sovereign citizen, which are likely to fail under the free market. Now, before the anarcho-capitalists or syndicalists or whatever get call in and start freaking out because they tend to have the view that the market can solve all problems, there is a certain amount of truth in that. But then there are other things that you don't want the free market to solve. For example, the military. If you leave it up to the market to deal with defense and war, then it becomes very dubious at best whether there is such a thing as just war or just defense, because once it becomes profitable, then you will want more of it in order to make it more profitable, which is the problem we have now. Transnational financiers are making massive profits by helping the government build a police state at home and a global empire abroad. You have to take the profit out of it. So the argument is, well, Rex, that makes sense, but the government has a monopoly on the armies and the defense, and look what mess we're in. The problem is that the proper use of the army at times of war is under the commander-in-chief. But the rest of the time, it is incumbent upon the people themselves, in an organized manner at their local and state level, to be prepared for defense. So there are some things the market shouldn't do, and there are some things that government should do, but the question is, which government? Is it your local government, your state government, or the federal government? And we've got all those answers, Tex. They were given to us by our founding fathers over two centuries ago in the Constitution. But we are so smart, we are so intelligent, that we've decided to transcend that archaic document and just give everything to the government to have all the power. And as long as our guy is in there, happy days are here again. But if the other
Pharaoh
guy gets
will
in
save
there,
us. Pharaoh will
right.
save us, though, Rex.
Exactly.
He's wise. He's very
yep.
wise, Pharaoh. And when something goes wrong, like there's a hurricane, it's probably because Pharaoh angered the gods somehow by not signing some global warming treaty, and that's why a hurricane hit, right? If he had signed the treaty, it wouldn't have hit. That's how it goes with Pharaoh.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the question is, do you think that this is just a naturally occurring phenomenon? Do you think it's divine intervention? Do you think it's HAARP technology that's causing it? It doesn't really matter. The point is that it's coming. And that in times of chaos like this, it would be a good idea to have government do these things. I mean, police and fire and EMTs. This is what local governments are set up to do. Okay, but here's the funny thing. The government always wants to thwart the free market when it comes to serving these needs where it is more efficient. I'm not saying that the free market can solve all problems, but it does most. Look at Katrina, okay, because that's the nearest example that I can think of. You mentioned Walmart earlier, Tex. Walmart actually had trucks full of clean bottled water to deliver to the poor people in New Orleans. Do you know why they never got there?
Government was in the way.
FEMA.
Actually,
FEMA's. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was working for the government then, and I was talking to a guy who was in the government. And they were talking about how screwed up it was. And he said, you know, we ought to just turn relief efforts over to Walmart. It's like, they know what they're doing better than the government does. He's like, the whole thing is a complete disaster. And then he started describing various things which I probably should go into, but just screw-ups from stem to stern. Basically, it's a bunch of bureaucrats who aren't really empowered to make decisions, and if they do make a decision, they make the wrong one, then everyone comes hunting for their head, so they sit there and they passively wait for orders that never come because the person above them doesn't want to be the one who says what to do, because then they'll come for his head. And so it's all this sort of, everyone's in a room like, oh God, we have to do something. And so they all turn and face the wall and pretend they're not there until someone comes in who's going to eventually end up accepting all the blame for everything that went completely wrong because the bureaucrats are not trained to make decisions or think on their feet. Actually, if anyone's listening, they lived under the Soviet system, you'd be very acquainted with this type of behavior on the part of bureaucrats, because under a complete government control system, nobody's taking any responsibility for anything, and they're all going to sit around and let it all fly off the cliff because they didn't get their orders in Soviet Central Committee say. That's why. And so that's why they can't do anything, because no one is empowered to make decisions. No one's rewarded for thinking on their feet and being proactive. If anything, they're heavily punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
But by all means, so turn everything over to them, because they'll save you. Government is great. It always helps out and never screws up in any way.
So, Tex, what you're saying, though, is that it's completely inefficient and completely fails to actually serve the needs when it's actually time for it to serve the needs. But they still get paid, even though they screw up, correct?
Here's the thing. Look, all governments have this innate bureaucratic need, and our government is no different, right? And the bureaucratic need is to create what the Chinese used to call the iron rice bowl. And the rice bowl is what you eat out of, and if it's iron, it can't be broken, and so you'll never go hungry, right? So the deal with any sort of government office or government program is that it's always going to need more funding and more staff, right? I mean, that's just the thing. And if you set a government agency to go study a problem, the result will be, yes, it is a problem, and if you give us more money and more staff, we'll be able to solve this problem, whether it happens to be, you know, I don't know, a housing crisis in the country, or something as dubious as the temperature of the planet. They apparently can solve it if you have enough staff and enough human being and enough money, they can actually fix solar output. No problem, no sweat. These bureaucrats are really good. But the idea of the Iron Rice Bowl is that you get a government program, or say you become somehow director of a government office, or you're appointed, your assistant secretary, or God only knows what your job is, and they give you some slice of money. So let's say they give your office, I don't know, $100 million, right? Okay, so now your office is in charge of $100 million, and you got staff, and you have programs that you're trying to do. And as soon as you get the money, the first rule of the bureaucracy is you have to spend it immediately. And the reason you have to spend it immediately is because later on during the year, the government will find parts of the government that overspent, and they don't have any money, or they have another initiative that they'd like to do, and they're looking for money to support it. So anybody who didn't spend their money, they lose that money. Okay, now, there's two things going on here that you haven't quite thought of, you know, yet, or that may not be directly apparent at first, which is, by spending the money, that means putting it on contract. So you have contractors with your office who are always on file, and if you need to, quote, spend the money, you just transfer it over to them, and now it's under contract, and that's considered spent, whether or not they've actually used the money yet or not, right? So then, now you've got your money under contract, and you've got to figure out what to do with it. Well, and sometimes you spent it so fast, you're not exactly sure what you want the contractor to do yet. You just know you're probably going to need a contractor for whatever you happen to be doing, and eventually you'll get back to it. Now, the contractor's very happy because he has this money sitting in his account. He's, you know, waiting to work, but they will get impatient, like, hey, you gave us this money. You haven't asked us to do anything. Did you want us to do something? Like, oh, God, yeah, I guess we got to figure out what we're going to do with you. But here's the thing. The person, when they come later and they're looking for the money, the person looking for the money who overspent his budget, he's a good bureaucrat because clearly his program is so big and important, he needs even more money to support his big and important program, and probably next year he'll need more money so this doesn't happen again and more staff, right, so that he can get his work done. The guy who actually forgot to spend his money or left some on the table, he is bad because Congress will find out that you're part of the bureaucracy, got $100 million, and you left $5 million on the table. And so what that means is next year your budget gets cut by $5 million because you don't need $5 million, and they take your $5 million and they give it to the guy who overspent his budget, right? And so the deal is always to grow your staff and always to grow your budget. There absolutely is no concept of, hey, I was able to get this job done faster, quicker, using less money and less staff. If you do that, you will be chased out of the bureaucracy. And this is why government always grows. And this is why people like me and others talk about, hey, we need to cut government spending. And this is why Washington says, no, we need to tax more. And therein, my friends, is why you and the nation is drowning in debt.
Well, Tex, that was, you know, a brilliant analysis. And what I took from it is that government incentives are almost the exact opposite of free market incentives, whereby in a free market you want to curtail costs, be more efficient, deliver more benefit to more people to increase your profitability. You're telling me in government it is about increasing costs, being more inefficient in order to acquire more largesse from those who are arbitrarily creating budgets.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a friend that's a contractor for, you know, well, I mean, his company is a contractor, and basically he works on these things, and, you know, he said, look, I deal with government all the time. He said, every incentive that government has is wrong. Every single incentive is wrong. It's completely the opposite of what it should be. And so, you know, talking about he's working on a contract, right? And so they got to go do some study or something, and they got to have some findings. And so in the process of working on this, it turns out there's another group of people who are doing a study on the exact same freaking issue, right? This guy's like, somebody just asked me all these questions. He's like, what? Huh? Who's doing? And he's, what group do you work for? Are you working for such and such group? No, I'm working for this group. And then it turns out there are no less than three simultaneous programs doing the exact same freaking thing, right? Doing the exact same study. Or something damn near. Mm-hmm. But the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing, you know? And then the incentives are wrong.
I can't say that I'm disappointed, given our current state of affairs, that A, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and B, that the incentives are wrong, because I actually am frightened by the thought of a lean, mean, and more efficient police state and IRS. So in some cases, bureaucracy is our friend because at least it keeps them at bay. Of course, that won't last forever. I think that in this type of bureaucratic socialist system, and let's just be very clear, that's exactly what we've got. Corporatism on its face is socialist, and that's where we are.
Well, I would say, you know, there are times when you're working for the bureaucracy, you wonder, is it better that it's so inefficient that it essentially is paralyzed, or would it be more frightening if it worked actually more efficiently and knew what it was doing? And the conclusion I came to is that it's paralyzed, it's inefficient, it's incentivized to grow and grow uncontrollably like a weed until basically, like weeds, it has snuffed out all other forms of life around it with its own inefficiencies, right? This is why the green energy industry and all these incentives and the Green New Deal and all these other stupid ideas are so wrong, because creating green jobs based on government subsidies, which is the people who are employed in the green jobs, their taxes are going to pay a subsidy to pay them to pay the to do their work, right? But the amount of money they're getting is more than the amount of taxes that they're paying, right? So it's the money is coming from somewhere, and you've created a fake industry that actually doesn't have a demand center, right? And so nobody's buying these products. Now you can compel people to buy the products, but they're so damn expensive now that people are going to go bankrupt buying the products because, you know, a battery-powered car isn't freaking cheap, you know? And it's difficult to drive around. A fuel cell vehicle, fuel cells run on precious metals, you know? They've got platinum in the freaking batteries, like a couple pounds of platinum in there, you know? How many pounds of platinum are you guys prepared to buy? Right now, I could ease you into this fuel cell vehicle. These things are works of art. I mean, they're like $150,000 vehicles. Now, if you go legislate, everyone's going to go buy it. But, you know, it's a fake industry created by government subsidies to get people to do boondoggle jobs to provide products that nobody wants. And so that's not a solution to the employment problem. That's sowing the seeds of your own destruction. But if the government were more efficient, let me tell you, you know, to get back to this, the government is so inefficient, and the purpose of the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing is to make sure that the right hand literally does not know what the left hand is doing. That is the purpose of the bureaucracy, because bureaucracies operate best in the shadows, where neither the American people nor Congress nor the people who are supposed to be overseeing it actually understand what in the hell is going on in the bureaucracy. It's all supposed to be a big mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed that way. So if Congress were able to get information out of the bureaucracy in a timely fashion, they might be able to cut some of this stuff, or at least have hearings on it, and it would come to the light of the American people, and they would realize what was going on, and then there would be some oversight, and then you could start, A, streamlining the government, and as you streamline the government, you reduce costs, and as you reduce costs, you bring the budget back into balance, and as you reduce costs, there no longer is a need to tax the hell out of everyone to keep affording this weed that's growing uncontrollably. So, you know, I'll tell you, I had that same internal debate when I was, you know, working in Washington, sitting in my office, and, you know, that's the conclusion that I came to. And, you know, of course, I started working towards that end, and I suffered all the horrible consequences that go along with trying to tell the bureaucracy that it's wrong. Someone came
You're
to my office.
You're a broken cog.
Someone came
to
my office, and they said, we're not wrong, you're wrong, and the bureaucracy is going to show you that. And basically, I mean, in the end, I won, but damn, talk about Waterloo, you know. I was Wellington, I'll say that, but, you know. Got a few swords in the chest in that battle, but you know, left a bitter taste in your mouth. So, anyway.
Well, Tex, what I find interesting about this, okay, because I think that you're absolutely right about this, and to some degree, I think the beautiful aspect of the system our founding fathers gave us is that it does have these competing sovereignties in order to check the growth of the weeds, as you put them, which we've been abdicating, and therefore everything's kind of been flowing into the Washington, D.C. area and just mushrooming from there. And then its tentacles reach out all across the country and actually all across the globe and start interfering in every aspect of your life, from what kind of light bulb you can put in what kind of water you can use to flush your toilet, to what you're allowed to eat, to what size soda you can have. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But here's the thing that I find fascinating. Right now we have a corporatist Keynesian puppet with Marxist tendencies who is clearly an incompetent community organizer because he's been an incompetent president. And I think that his bosses have decided that he's so incompetent he's actually dangerous to their interests, not necessarily to the country. He's obviously dangerous to the country, but that's a minor issue for them, that they've decided to replace him with the efficient, number-crunching, uber-capitalist, corporatist Keynesian Mitt Romney. Now, what I find interesting, though, is we'll either approach. Obviously, Obama's failed for 4 years to rein in anything. For the most part, he's failed to enact most of his own programs. I mean, clearly
I don't think he even likes the job or wants it anymore, to be honest. I think Obama's like, just tell me when this election's over because I'd like to go.
Yeah.
You know? he does have that effect on some people, you know? So
yeah, especially those who...
He's like, get me the hell out of here. I'd like to go on a book tour and talk to people about what I did and not actually be doing it at the current time. Anyway.
Yeah, because it would make it sound better after the fact rather than when I'm actually responsible for what happens.
Yep.
You know, and I think that, you know, they play these games with trying to manage our mind as to who's going to win and how he's going to win and who goes up and who goes down. But my question to you is, if a guy like Mitt Romney, who, let's be clear, doesn't have a conservative bone in his body, maybe capitalist in the sense that he's a for-profit, you know, manager of capital, but he's not a for-profit manager of capital in an entrepreneurial sense where he sees a need, satisfies it, brings the most benefit to the most people, and garners his profit that way. He's the kind of guy who says, okay, how can we funnel things to this place or that place, leverage it out, transfer the risk either to government or to some other moron or bankrupt it, and then grab our investment profits as opposed to our work profits. How does a guy like that, given the job of chief executive of this ever-expanding bureaucracy that I doubt anybody in the White House knows how big it actually is, how is he going to help us with, say, making government efficient, putting it back into its enumerated limits, balance the budget, reduce taxes?
He can't. Well, he's not going to. That's not his job. That's not what he's intending to do, which is why he never talks about those things. All he says is, I've run businesses, so I know how to make an organization work, right? Or some other platitude, but he never says, I'm going to go in, I'm going to fix this, it's about the bureaucracy. It's always, oh, we're going to, you know, eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Yeah, they've been eliminating that since the freaking 80s, and it's still around, you know? That's not the intention. Look, I think what happened is, Wall Street bought a pig in a poke in Barack Obama. They thought, this young guy, he doesn't know jack about anything. So we'll just be able to push him around and get him in office, push him around. We'll get our, you know, near trillion, $800 billion or whatever bailout that we want, right? And he'll just give that to us because he doesn't really have a choice. And then we'll just kind of tell him what to do. And, you know, he'll go up there. People find him inspiring, so they'll be inspired by what he's doing, what he's talking about. They'll feel good. We're in a post-racial America, and then everybody will be happy, and the Bush years will be gone. And I think that's all they thought about it, right? So then he got in, and he was just kind of incompetent at it, you know? And then, you know, I think when he first started out, he's like, okay, well, you know, off to a rough start, but I'll get the hang of this presidency thing here pretty soon. And then, you know, you realize how sprawling a job the presidency is, you know? If there's green-on-blue attacks in Afghanistan, they're waking you up in the middle of the night over that kind of stuff. If something's going on in Libya, you got to be on top of what's going on in Libya. If something happens in Colombia with the war on drugs, or if Mexico is falling apart and about to go in a civil war, you got to be on top of that. Oh, yeah, by the way, you have a tax program. Oh, yeah, socialized medicine. Now you got to go hit the streets, you know, going all around the country talking about socialized medicine. Meanwhile, they're calling and saying, hey, China just did this. You know, what's going on with their tariff policy? It's like, holy crap, you know, like, it's not an easy job, you know. And as someone who, you know, really his job was has always been to go to communities and sort of tell them what to do and inspire them, you know, with like a bullhorn or something, or be a visiting professor who's supposedly teaching the Constitution about which he doesn't really seem to know very much. Really, all of his jobs are about standing up and pretending to be the world's expert on whatever the talking about, right? So getting in there and actually having to do something is a different set of skills, and I don't think he necessarily had them. So then there was the deal with Dodd-Frank, and I don't think Wall Street was very happy with Dodd-Frank. I don't think most industries in the United States were very happy with Dodd-Frank.
I got to disagree with you on that one, but continue.
Well, you talk about the level of regulation that they're putting on, you know, various industries, and the energy industry is one in particular in terms of swaps and that kind of stuff. I think they were very upset with quite a bit of that, and the amount of regulation coming from Sarbanes-Oxley with Dodd-Frank coming on top of that, you know, they're just like, this guy wants his trillion back. I mean, what's going on? You know, that's not how it works. So they're like, look, we need to get a guy who goes in there and who's like an efficient, you know, sort of manager, who's kind of up to the task of managing a multi, you know, billion-dollar operation, and could take this on. And so we'll get our guy, Mitt Romney, right? And that basically is the deal. They're like, we got to do the old switcheroo here. And they said, but the problem is Mitt Romney, the reason we like him so much is he's one of us. But Republicans, mm-hmm. they got this whole Tea Party thing going on where they're upset about government spending. We like the government spending, right, because we're getting mm-hmm. the bailouts and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we got to get our rhino guy through the Republican primary system. Well, how do we do that? Well, you know, Romney's been laying the groundwork. Let's pump a bunch of money into him, right, and then start sort of buying up a bunch of candidates, buying up media support and all this kind of stuff. How else would you explain the fact that, first off, Barack Obama defeated the Clintons when the Clintons essentially owned the Democrat Party back then? How is this complete political novice able to overcome them and all the money go to him? And then secondly, in the Republican primary this year, Mitt Romney, who no Republican wanted or supported or really wanted to even see on the ticket, all the talk is all Mitt all the time, how Mitt's going to be the inevitable nominee, and you might as well just admit it. Every single time he failed, it's about, well, Mitt's going to come back because he's got all the money, and, you know, he really is a moderate. He has the best chance of winning and all this kind of stuff. And then they start puffing up this candidate that nobody cared about, that basically was a fourth-tier outsider, no political future whatsoever, Rick Santorum, who lost his Senate race in Pennsylvania by the widest majority in history, basically a has-been with no money and no organization, and the media starts pumping him up like he's, you know, the next best thing, right? They did it in order to protect Romney because the fix has been in from the get-go to swap out Obama with Romney.
I agree. Right? I agree with you 100% on that. And, yeah, I agree with you. Romney is one of them. And by one of them, he's one of those guys who likes government rules that are so bureaucratic and complicated that the average person hasn't a clue what they are, that can be manipulated to suck money towards your boondoggles because you are afraid to actually compete in the marketplace. And you can see this by his huge success as the turnaround guy for the Utah Winter Olympics. Bullshit. He didn't turn anything around. He went over there and he was just able to suck government grant after government funding after program. And he was proud of it. I'm going to go to Washington. That's where the money is. We're going to get it. So that's the kind of guy he is. And those are the same guys who dispatch their lobbyists to draft bills that our congressional morons didn't read and use Dodd and Frank to push it through, which regulates Wall Street because of all their bad behavior. Government has to step in and be the champion of the people to make sure that these fat cats on Wall Street don't get away with it again, except that the fat cats on Wall Street are the guys who put those rules in place because more regulation benefits those who, A, know the rules, and, B, can afford to pay the, quote, big fines. And it eliminates all of the competitors and doesn't allow anybody to rise up to their level, which is why since they put these things in place, we've lost bank after bank after bank that have been subsumed into this national strategy, which basically is under the Federal Reserve, and the private owners of the Federal Reserve are the same ones that own the major banks that you see in every corner because they're expanding while everything else is receding because they got all the free money. And that's like, you know, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, Citi. Okay, these are the connected banks. And so what's happening here is that they take all these excessive risks because there's really no risk in it, and they privatize their profits. So they're actually redistributing wealth, except instead of redistributing it to the, quote, poor, they are redistributing it more to those who already have it. And then when the thing blows up in their face because it's over-leveraged and completely dicked up. They socialize the losses because they're too big to fail, and they're doing it to look out for you, because if your bank fails, you'll lose your little savings account. So we need to give trillions of dollars to all these guys on Wall Street so you can keep your little savings account. In the meantime, the actual value of your savings account has been cut by half. It's a scam, and Romney is the epitome of this scam, because he's supposed to give us this false sense of choice that we can get out this terrible Marxist Muslim sympathizer Obama, and I believe all those things are true, and he does need to go. But if we get rid of him and we replace him with a guy who is equally as bad, what's changed? How have we affected the rules of the game? We haven't. It still expands. We'll still be involved in a global empire with wars all over the place. We'll still be spending more than we can. We're still going to borrow 40 to 50 cents on every dollar that the government gives out. And I think that the problem just perpetuates itself, and we are going to collapse because of this if we don't change it. Who can change it? It's so corrupt. It's so big. It's so entrenched. We can change it. You have to wake people up.
And the thing is, look, if Romney didn't get it, and even if he did, there's a double whammy for conservatives in the Romney candidacy, right? So let's say Romney loses on November 6th. Thank God. But that would mean Obama wins. Oh, dear God, you know. But if Romney loses, what they're going to say is right-wing conservative candidates like Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul and Rick Santorum, they pulled Romney too far to the right during the primary, and he was never able to get back to the center. That's what they're going to say. Okay.
Yep.
First, I never heard Romney say any right-wing anything or any conservative anything the whole freaking time he's been running. I've actually never heard him really say much of anything when he is running. Then, if Romney does win, okay, and we've already seen that narrative test, you know, having a test run, okay, that's what was happening in September when Romney was failing horribly. They were like, well, I think he went too far to the right. He's not connecting with independents. I think conservatives don't really like him. You know, well, then, if he wins, you're screwed again, because the narrative is going to be, see, by running these conservatives, they're too controversial and people won't vote for them. It's moderates that you need to win. And I will cite as an example that Republicans have never liked Olympia Snowe, basically because she is like Mitt Romney, a Republican in name only. She goes up there, claims to be a Republican, and then votes for the Democrats all the freaking time, right? So now there's a race to replace her seat between a Republican and a Democrat, and an independent who's their former governor from back in the 90s or something. The guy who's winning with well over 50% of the vote is their former governor. And the Republicans are a distant second, behind by 15% of the vote, and the Democrat is, you know, way, way further down the ballot. And so the conclusion that the Washington RNC GOP establishment has drawn is that the Republicans must now be regretting that they got rid of Olympia Snowe, right? Because now this guy who's basically a left-wing dude is winning by all this votes, and wouldn't you be better off if you had Olympia Snowe? And my answer is no. No, we wouldn't. Part of the reason this guy is winning is likely due to the fact that the Republican Party completely screwed over the main GOP during the primary, when there were a whole bunch of counties that went and voted, but if they weren't going to vote for Mitt Romney, the Republican Party shut them out of the process. And mm-hmm. people probably are pissed off about it. They're not thinking, gee, I wish Olympia Snowe was on the ballot. They're probably thinking, fuck the Republican Party and what they did to us. And I'm not going to vote for that SOB. A pox on both your houses. Notice the Democrats are doing even worse. So we'll go for this independent guy who was governor of our state before, and you know what? He did a fair to middling job back then, certainly better than these damn GOP people who come in and try these sort of gangster-style tactics against us, and, you know, the freaking Democrats are basically a bunch of socialist communists now. So that's the conclusion I would draw from that, not that Olympia Snowe is the tonic that we need all across the nation to solve these Republican problems. There's no point in a Republican victory if the Republican doesn't believe what the base of the party believes. What that means is the base of the party is in the wrong party, and the, quote, leadership of the party is not the leadership of the party. It's a leadership of another party that has been transplanted on top of this party, claims to support the base and this group of people, but yet sells them out at every opportunity and then uses their big megaphone in the media to go badmouth them and tell them why the things that they want are not what they really want and how they should support the leadership, because the leadership knows the best path to victory, even though that victory is a victory against everything that you actually believe.
Well, Tex, that begs the question, if no one in the party, the base of the party, the actual conservatives and libertarians who form the rank and file of the Republican Party, wants Mitt Romney, if Mitt Romney doesn't believe in anything that we stand for, because clearly he's not for diffused power, he's not for lower taxes, he's not for our social values, he's not for free markets, he doesn't want to do anything about the Federal Reserve, which is the root of all the problems that we have, he doesn't want to curtail the wars. I mean, basically, he's Obama. It's like, you know, here's your president, it comes in two flavors. Pick a flavor, and it's going to taste the same. How does a leadership, allegedly, like this, Prince Pubic and John Boehner and John Sununu and Mitt Romney, how do they hold so many millions of people captive? Because that's exactly how I describe it. Basically, if you're a Republican, if you're a conservative or a libertarian or slash a conservative libertarian, whatever your political ideology is, but it tends toward the Goldwater, Reagan,
I'll tell you exactly.
Ron Paul move. Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly how. Because they have the money. That's why. And the money doesn't want what we want, which is shutting off government spending, right? They want the money to flow because you're on the hook for it. And the thing is, if you're really wealthy, it doesn't matter if you're on the hook for it because you're on the hook for it later down the road, and that's okay. You're good for it because you're going to be cleaning up today with current dollars, and you're going to be paying that back tomorrow with deflated dollars. So it doesn't matter. But if you don't have a ton of money, that's a lot of money to be spending right now. Mm-hmm. And, your standard of living is going down, and so you don't like it. So they're okay, and they just assume since they're okay, everyone else must be okay, or if they're not okay, screw them, who cares? Then secondly, it's because the mentality of the voter of the Republican Party, and I spoke to someone about this weekend, we were talking about voting, and I said, oh, I've already voted. And I said, you voted for Mitt Romney, didn't you? And he said, well, yeah, I did. I don't really like Mitt Romney. I just don't like Obama, and I want to see him get out of office. And I said, well, what's the difference if you replace him with somebody with the exact same policies? He's like, well, at least it's a different person. I mean, literally, that's what they said, right? And then they said, look, I don't really like Mitt Romney. I don't like where the party's going. I don't like all this kind of stuff. But unless everybody goes along and votes for a third party, there's really no use in doing it because then my vote doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true. Your vote now doesn't count because you just went and voted against everything you freaking believe in. Now it doesn't count because you're not a serious voter. You're just a go-along-to-get-along douchebag. You'll vote for anything as long as, well, everybody else is doing it, so I'm just going to go along because otherwise my vote wouldn't count. Well, no, your vote doesn't count now. Because you just voted for somebody that you don't agree with. And now they're like, oh, yeah, that idiot voted for me. I completely disagree with him on everything. Screw him. I'll never do anything in that person's interest. But, hey, at least he voted for the, quote, winner, right? Now he must be a winner, too. No, you're a loser. Because you voted against your own interests. If you started voting for people who actually stood for what you want to see happen in the country, that party would start gaining in support and eventually would become the second party in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happens. And you've got to go out and talk to people and defend why you did what you did. And, hey, look at this position. I think this is a better position. Because, look, I think Mitt Romney is going to get elected president, right? And so if he comes into office, be prepared for the inevitable betrayal.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's going to get in office, and he's going to, you know, George Bush Sr. you. Or even on, you know, George Bush Jr. you with all the spending that was going on there in Washington after they got rid of Gingrich.
Yep,
and then, because you're a team player, you're going to be sitting there 4 years from now defending how everything Mitt Romney did was great because he's such a smart and wise person because he's a Republican, even though deep down, he did everything against what you absolutely believe, because all you care about is your stupid team. And that's what's killing the country. Mm-hmm. People who are making those decisions and decisions like that, that's what's killing the nation.
Tex, I agree. And I think, actually, I think Mitt Romney will be even faster than Jimmy Carter at the betrayal. If you remember back in 76, Carter picked up most of the born-again and evangelical Christian vote because he ran as a Christian conservative, and they believed him. And in his acceptance speech, he betrayed them. Now, that's pretty fast, and I'm fairly confident that Romney will actually be able to do it even faster, because I think he's that much of an arrogant prick that once he has the job, which I suspect he already knows he does, he's just going to crap all over you. And the
he's going to do it when he's putting his cabinet together and when he's announcing what he's going to do. That's when it's all going to come out. And then, you know, these Mark Levins and all these other dudes who said, oh, well, you know, look, I don't like Romney, but when he gets in office, we got to watch him. We got to watch him like a hawk, and we got to make sure. Screw you, man. Oh, yeah, I'm going to trust Mark Levin, the guy who's got, like, eagle eyes all over this Mitt Romney guy. Well, where were your eagle eyes during the primary, you piece of crap? You weren't
When was the last time the board of directors hired a CEO and said, okay, this guy doesn't really believe in the same things that we do. He's not going to take the company the direction that our shareholders elected us to take it in, but we're going to put him in place, and then we're going to watch him like a hawk and hold his feet to the fire. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You hire the guy who's going to do the things you want done. And that's the stupid thing. Now, the thing that just gets me, listen to this, okay? Let's just describe your average, truly conservative, not just, you know, Republican label or pretending to be a Republican, but truly conservative Republican voter, which is, I would argue, the dominant portion of Republican voters, okay? Are they beginning to have positive feelings towards Mitt Romney?
Well, I think some of them are, because they're like, Obama's going away. It's going to be great. Obama's going to go away.
Yeah, I see Mitt Romney's great. Romney Ryan are going to save the Constitution. Romney Ryan for a better America. Believe in America. So I'm seeing that they're having positive feelings towards Mitt Romney, which would make you think, well, then how come 70% of them couldn't stand him in the primaries? But are they having negative feelings towards conservatives who don't have positive feelings towards Romney?
Well, absolutely, because, oh, my God, if they don't vote for our guy, we could lose, and that would be the worst thing ever, because then we lost to Obama. You know, look, here's the thing. You know, I'm a believer in J-curves, right? So the country's sort of, you know, on the brink here and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, our political establishment thinks that, oh, don't worry, we can manage this thing out. We'll just go manage popular opinion. We'll get them to support our guys. We're going to maintain the status quo. Remind yourself that the status quo is what's wrong and what you don't like, right? That's what you want to change. So, like, well, don't worry, we'll get a status quo candidate, but we'll repackage him, we'll refocus group him, we'll get him to say these magic words instead of those poisonous words, and then when he says these magic words, they'll vote for our candidate, and they won't know that the same status quo that they hate is actually going to continue, right? So there is some benefit in having the other guy screw up so bad, right, that eventually everybody wakes up and it's like, holy crap, what in the hell is going on? And then you don't have a situation where you could be bamboozled by a Mitt Romney, by the people on the news media trying to explain to you how everything's okay when everything around you is on fire, right? And then when everyone's woken up and you can plainly see, who are you going to believe, the TV people or your own lying eyes, then you realize this is what happens when this crap gets out of control. But what's going to happen is if Mitt Romney gets into, like, oh, it's Mitt Romney, the Republicans won. Okay, well, let's go off, and I got a birthday party coming up. I'm going to do this, that, and the other. And then you tune out, and you come back in 4 years like, well, I got to support Mitt Romney because otherwise Hillary Clinton's going to get in. It doesn't end with these people.
It doesn't. And now, Tex, we've got about 10 minutes before the top of the hour when we'll open up a line for callers, but I just want to kind of lay into the topic a little bit so everybody can focus up when they call in. So far you've told me that true conservatives are developing or expressing positive feelings towards Romney, who's absolutely not a conservative. They are expressing negative feelings towards those who are still conservative and won't support Romney.
Well, I would say they are apologetic that they voted for Romney. They still don't like him, but they're excited that he can – apparently beat Obama, and that right now is their only criteria for voting for anyone.
Well, are they supporting?
So they have positive feelings about the fact that Obama will be defeated. They are sort of embarrassed that Romney is the guy who apparently is going to do this. And
right.
I'm sick of
it. He's not my first choice or my second choice, but he's our choice, so we're going to go for it. But do you find them, as you said, apologizing?
My next choice after voting for Romney was blowing my own brains out, but I decided I would just vote for Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
I mean,
so,
that's where they are.
Are they basically making excuses and providing support reasons for Mitt Romney's departure from our principles? Like, oh, it's bad that he's not really conservative, but compared to Obama, it's better, that kind of thing?
Well, what they always come back to is the same BS, because they're getting this straight from the media. Well, he's a businessman, so, you know, I think he'd do a better job than Obama. How does that – what the fuck does that even mean? He's a businessman. Oh, because he knows about profit and loss. Okay, well, clearly you don't know anything about the government, because the government doesn't run on profit and loss. It doesn't have a product that it has to sell. It has an army – that can point guns at people and make them do what it wants it to do, right? You know, try not paying your taxes. See how far you get with that. People will come to your house and they will take all your stuff. You know, it's like, you know, hey, this is Apple. We got a new novelty product. It's called the iPad. I hope you love it. Also, if you don't buy it, I'm going to send somebody to your house and come take your crap. That's government product, you know? So knowing about profit and loss is irrelevant, because the profit and loss of the government is someone else's money. It's your money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they don't even need the money. I mean, let's be honest, because if there's not enough tax money, which there hasn't been lately because the economy's been so crappy, and so many of you have been out of work, and therefore you haven't been paying taxes, and that cuts into the government's, you know, ability to spend money, well, only on paper, then they just go to the Federal Reserve and they're like, hey, could you shoot us like $2 trillion? You know, I don't know. This guy's these. They're done. They're out of money right now. But give us $2 trillion, we'll, you know, flush it out in the system. Okay,
yep.
We don't actually have $2 trillion, but
can I make it
sure.
Up?
Yeah. So we'll pretend we have $2 trillion, and now you have $2 trillion, and just go take it over there and spend it like you got it. And then nobody will really know, and then, you know, we'll just steal the money from their standard of living, because all of their, you know, combined incomes will all shrink by $2 trillion if the price of everything goes up by a combined $2 trillion. And that basically is how we'll tax them when we get the money out.
And they won't even notice
right?
it, because they still have the same dollar in their wallet. It's just worth 80 cents. But they don't know that.
Yeah.
And they bitch about
well,
the prices going up, because the prices going up are clearly the fault of the merchant and those greedy capitalist business owners.
Yeah. Well, see, because here's the thing. When they flush the money in and they bail out like GM with all this money to go buy all this property, plant, and equipment and all this kind of stuff, you know what they don't do? They're not raising the wage, right? And so their cost of goods sold goes down, and so their profit margin goes up, because the price of the good they're selling increases, right? But the cost of making it basically stays the same, except for the material cost, but the labor portion shrinks. And that
mm-hmm.
basically is how they get back in the black.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that basically your wages are not going up with the amount of devaluation of the money. So what's happening is that the wealth is being redistributed, and everybody's freaking out because Obama's taking our hard-earned dollars and giving them to people who haven't worked and don't deserve it. Oh, I'm sure some of that's going on. That's how he buys votes. But for the most part, your wealth, all of us, meaning everybody who's in the, quote, 99%. I don't know what the percentage is, but, you know, these days that's the number we use, 99%, 1%. It's not a real number, but you get the symbolic attribute of it. All our wealth is being confiscated and funneled up to those connected to government. Not only connected to government, but it's basically like this axis that runs up I-95 from Washington to Wall Street. It's just basically one back-and-forth favor, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, we'll print you up some money, we'll put it on the ledger, we'll funnel it back to you. You know, hey, don't worry about it. These morons out in the flyover country, they don't know squat about this stuff. And that's the way that it keeps going. But what I find fascinating, Tex, is, you know, we've gone over the fact that these conservatives have developed feelings, positive feelings for Romney, who they know is not conservative. They have negative feelings towards those who won't go along to get along because, you know, he's wearing our team jersey. They make excuses for and support his behaviors just because he's not Obama. They've developed positive feelings for him. And they seem to have this inability to engage in behaviors that will kind of detach them from this brand identity and allow them to cognitively analyze the real situation and realize that Romney is extremely dangerous to not only the country, just as Obama is, but Romney is extremely dangerous to the cause of conservatism in the Republican Party.
Yeah, because look, for better or worse, and mostly for worse, the Republican Party is identified with the conservative cause. And so when Mitt Romney goes in and he does all this liberal stuff and things get screwed up, they blame conservatives when Mitt Romney's not a conservative. So his screw-ups are going to be blamed on your movement. That's okay, because the Republican Party was already prepared to throw you over the bridge, because if he lost, they're going to blame you for the loss, even though it's their fault for trying to jam this stupid rhino down our throat. That's why he loses, is because nobody wanted him in the first place. And then if he wins, they're going to say, see, this means that conservatives don't matter. So in all scenarios, conservatives get marginalized and sidelined. But the only one where you have a leg to stand on after the election within the party is if Romney loses, because then you can go and say, why the hell did you jam that damn rhino down our throat? Nobody wanted fucking Mitt Romney from day one, we told you. And you kept Romney, most electable, most electable. But if he gets elected, then what are you going to say?
Yeah.
What are you going to say?
Well, Tex, I hate to tell you this,
so,
because...
Well, they're going to tell you to go shut the hell up and how nobody wants to hear from you anymore.
Yep. I hate to tell you this, but because before the stolen convention... we were very actively telling them, rhinos lose, moderates lose, don't put up a rhino. This is a terrible way to run the election. We're not going to vote for them. You're going to lose. And they did it anyway. But now, watching the media narrative and the way things have played out post these fake debates, I got to tell you, man, I'm not a betting man, but it looks to me like we're going to have Mitt Romney as POTUS on November 7th.
Well, I think so. But look, after that convention, you look at what was going on in September, you look at that poll numbers, Romney was behind in every single swing state, you know, and he was behind by 10 points. And
he still is.
He was just dead in the freaking water. There was nothing to do. And so when that debate came, you know, the whole media all over the place, Romney won that debate. Wow, he looks really presidential. You know, and people tune in, oh, my God, Romney. Oh, maybe he could win. You know, maybe something good. You know, maybe, you know, it's just I just don't want Obama to win, right? And so that just became the new narrative, that Romney was winning. Even the left picked up on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they're trying to, you know, get back on the right side of the fence and, you know, so, oh, yeah, well, Romney's terrible and this is racism and all this kind of crap, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is, they actually couldn't believe. They're like, holy shit, people aren't voting for Mitt Romney. Nobody likes this guy. How the hell did that happen? I thought they would just vote the jersey.
Well, I think a lot of them
are going to. And so everyone was
disillusioned.
And just, you know, depressed that Romney was the guy, because this was supposed to be the most important election of our lifetime. Now it's the most irrelevant election of your lifetime. This election literally doesn't freaking matter, because these guys have the exact same policies, because they're supported by the same group of people, are behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you're doing the same damn thing.
Yep. And here's the real terrible part about it, because all this behavior we've just described, it's fucking Stockholm Syndrome. That's what they're relying on. They are getting us as hostages to sympathize with our captor and voting jersey instead of principle. In the meantime, they're selling us out. They're selling us out. Now, the way they're going to sell us out, because we keep falling for it, because you refuse to wake up, and if you are awake, you are not working hard enough to get the others awake, because I know it's difficult, because they give you shit, because they tell you you're crazy, they tell you that you're a traitor, they tell you you're destroying the party, and you get cowed down by this politically correct peer pressure. But the problem is that they're going to give us our flag, they're going to give us our elephant, they're going to give us the Star-Spangled Banner and the football games and all the apple pie and all the wonderful stuff that we all like in America on the surface. And underneath, they are going to rot it into a pale shadow of what she once was, and then they're going to just subsume us into a global monetary system to keep floating the damn paper that they can't float much longer, because they've been doing it for 42 fucking years and it's about to implode. And the only way they can do it is to put a larger pyramid scheme on top of this. But we keep supporting it. And that's
the
problem.
Yeah. And here's the thing, Rex. Look, a lot of people have already orderly voted. So some of them may have already voted for Romney and they can't undo it. If you already voted for Mitt Romney, you know, you got an obligation to go talk to the party. and say, what in the hell's going on? Look, I voted for Mitt Romney, but only because I hated Barack Obama. I don't like anything Mitt Romney stands for. And, you know, I think that he's a, you know, rhino, and I think he's going to sell us out. And what is the party doing to make sure that we don't get these kinds of candidates in the future? Because nobody liked this guy. But if you're just like, well, Romney won, so everything's okay, and you go home, I mean, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
The Republic might as well be over because they were able to pull it over on you, and then you didn't do anything about it.
That's right. You accepted it. You encouraged it, and you played along with it. Tex, we are at the top of the hour, so I'm going to open up the phone to some callers. And what we're talking about is obviously the election and how people are being convinced to vote for someone who doesn't represent any of their values, beliefs, and clearly doesn't adhere to the Constitution. A couple of points real quick. This superstorm hurricane, and again, whether you think it's divine intervention, HAARP technology, or just a natural cause is really not the point, but it is wreaking havoc in this area. And so therefore, the second free and equal debate, which I have honestly my doubts about the quote equal part because it only includes Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson and Virgil Goode wouldn't be there. But they have moved it. It is not on October 30th anymore. They have moved it to November 5th. So the free and equal debate with Gary Johnson and Jill Stein is November 5th. However, on November 4th, we have another real debate in Washington District of Corruption. It is being sponsored by Ralph Nader, who everybody remembers as the, quote, left-wing Ross Perot costing Al Gore the election the way Ross Perot cost Bush the election. Like it makes a fucking difference whether you elected Al Gore, George Bush, George H.W. Bush, or whatever, okay, Bill Clinton. I mean, they're all after the same thing, just different rhetorical approaches. But that debate is being sponsored by Ralph Nader. It'll be in Washington, D.C. on November 4th. Details are available online as they're developing, and that'll include Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, and Virgil Goode. Tex and Rex will do our best to broadcast following both of those debates at 11 o'clock. Our next show is currently scheduled for Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern. However, keep an eye on our page because obviously with power problems because of the storm, that may not happen. So please go to our Facebook page, which is the Tex and Rex Show and spelled out, like our page, and you can also follow us in Blog Talk Radio and get notifications of when we are broadcasting. So Tex, unless you got something to add, I'm going to go ahead and open up the line to our first caller.
Yeah, just one thing about the storm and like the HAARP technology. Look, sometimes a storm is just a storm. Remember when some days it just rained, you know, and now it wasn't like, it's just rain, man. That's all it is, a freaking storm.
Natural phenomenon.
Exactly. Why does everybody got to go back and start, you know, like we're medieval people or something, or, you know, ancient people and freaking Zeus is fighting with the Titans. It's just raining, man.
Poseidon.
It's raining.
It's Poseidon,
yeah.
Man. You know it's Poseidon.
Poseidon's
good point.
It all.
Yeah, good, that bastard. Good point, Tex, but it also brings up another point. We freak out about these things because we haven't seen such a large hurricane coming at the same time as snow fronts and winter fronts on the eastern seaboard when it's been developed to this degree in a very long time. What we seem to forget is that in geological time, we don't fucking count. The planet's 4.5 billion years old. These weather patterns have been around for 100 million years, so when we go, well, we got all our data back to 1817, and this is the biggest storm ever. You're talking about 200 years. The meanderings of the global movement in climate change and warming and cooling, all this stuff is so much grander than that. I mean, friggin' Jupiter's had a hurricane now for what, the last four centuries?
Yeah,
so,
as far as we know.
You know, as far as we know, because we couldn't see it before.
Actually,
that, right?
Actually, it's another one, too. Now they got the big red spot, it's got the big white spot.
It's crazy. It's almost like there's two different colored spots, and you get to pick which one you want, and you'll get the same result, a shitstorm with helium. All right. First caller is, let's see who's been on hold the longest. Okay, my first caller is 954. I believe that's Florida, 954. You're on the line with Tex and Rex. Who are you, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, it's Harriet. I don't want to speak.
Hi,
I just
Harriet.
Want to
Hello. I don't want to speak. I just want to wish you people lots of luck.
Need lots of luck.
Yeah, you can't imagine what the storm could be until it passes through, so be careful what you wish.
We appreciate that. Well, thanks for listening here. If you need anything, just let us know.
Okay, thank you.
All right, next is another Florida caller, and I believe this is from the Jacksonville area. Is this the awesome patriot, Sam Sanford?
Hello, you have Sam here.
Hey, Sammy, we need to get you back in that Chinese torture room and beat you some more.
Hey, Sammy.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dex and hey, Rex. Y'all need to torture me more. Do force me.
Yeah, because we beat you into becoming a Paul bot, and here you are promoting Virgil Goode. What's going on? We failed. We got to beat you again.
And I'm sorry for you people out there that will vote blindly. Tomorrow, my family and I we're going to do early voting. And we are voting for Virgil Goode here in Florida. He is actually on the ballot. And we are going to go vote for him tomorrow, early voting. And for you people out there, you need to wake up and stop drinking the Kool-Aid. The Kool-Aid for Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, they are both fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not going to drink that Kool-Aid. And I'm not going back down. Now, we had an awesome show tonight, and for some reason or another, after I shut down the show, my mic kept running after I actually kicked the show off. We had an awesome show tonight. And
that's Echelon. That's Echelon, Sammy. They listen in on everything.
Yep. But we're not going to shut up, and we're not going back down. And Tex and Rex, I mean, y'all held me down and beat the crap out of me down there in Tampa. And, I mean, y'all forced me to say things that I don't believe in. I mean,
well,
y'all
Sammy,
held me
down. Well,
Sammy,
that's why you got that mark on your head.
Triclops.
No. Nobody has. I've always said I would never vote for Mitt Romney or vote for Barack Obama. I have said that on my show many times.
Mm-hmm.
And these two awesome patriots have never, ever swayed me. I am not I've been accused of being a Gary Johnson fan by people.
Man.
Yes, I like Gary Johnson. He did a good job in a debate the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But I am voting for Virgil Goode. He reflects my Constitution values, and I will not shut up. I am not the Lemon Party. Those idiots came onto the show tonight.
Oh, yeah?
They're
nice to know that you're loved.
Yep. All right.
By the way, to all the listeners out there, do not go to the Lemon Party website. It is not what you think it is. I strongly advise you to avoid it at all costs.
Exactly. But gentlemen, y'all keep up the fight and don't shut up. I got to go eat some dinner now. I got to get home from work. And God bless you all, and God bless my family right now, because we got some other hard times coming to us.
Mm-hmm.
And Rex knows about that one issue.
Yeah.
And we love you all very much. And keep up the fight, Tex.
Absolutely.
And Rex.
Absolutely. Sammy, I know that you've got a lot on your plate, and I know that your health is always a cross you have to carry. Are you going to be doing any shows this coming week? Are you able to do that?
Yep, we'll probably be doing a show. You do yours on Tuesday and Thursday?
That is correct, 10 p.m. That's the intention.
Okay, tomorrow night I will do one at 11 and one on Wednesday. And after that, I can't predict right
okay.
now.
Sure. We understand, Sammy, and we applaud you for not shutting up and staying strong for conservative principles and those things that drew us all to support Newt Gingrich in the early primaries. And so everybody check out Sammy Sanford, 11 p.m. this Monday and Wednesday, and that's Constitutional Conservatives Unite on Blog Talk Radio.
Exactly. Amen. Constitutional Conservatives Unite. I am promoting the Constitution Party. I will not, but if there are Gary Johnson people on there, I do not attack them. And Gary Johnson people are awesome patriots. But we're not going to shut up, and we're not going back down. And God bless you all, and love every one of y'all.
All right. Thank
Thanks
you, sir.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Sammy.
You're welcome. Rex and Tex, y'all are awesome patriots. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was the great Sam Sanford, and let's see here. Now we've got a caller. I'm looking for numbers here. 903, I believe that's Mary. Mary, is that you?
That's me.
Hi.
Hi
Thanks
there.
For calling in.
Well, I was just thinking about your show, and the main thing that comes to mind when y'all were talking is, you know, I'm a little concerned if Romney gets in, because then, you know, he'll have more power than Obama does. I mean, because he'll have the R
thanks
behind
to Obama.
Huh?
I said thanks to Obama.
Yeah.
Obama
yeah,
sucked
sure.
up all those executive orders. He's going to hand them over to Mitt Romney. That's going to make it great.
Yeah. I mean, there's R. That's already so scary. And then he has the R by his name. And so then he's got the, you know, the House. If that stays the same, I mean, it's just the power that's going to be there. It's just scary. I mean, the more I learn about all this, it's a frightening situation if you want to get down to it. And most people, the thing that's so frightening about it is most people don't know anything about it.
Well, that's how you avoid it being frightening. See, sometimes the truth can be frightening, Mary, and I think this is an important point, actually, because we were talking earlier about how the way that you get conservatives to vote for a non-conservative, even a liberal Republican, is by managing their minds in the way that a hostage taker will do it with, you know, like the Stockholm Syndrome way. But the fear that we encounter is because the situation is dire. You know, the country we grew up in, the country our founding fathers gave us, the republics that are confederated together under the banner of the Constitution, is really not there anymore except in our memories. But the power to restore it is right at our fingertips, and it's the fear that keeps us away from using it. And that's what they want. They want us pitted against each other. They want conservatives yelling at each other because we won't support the thieving candidate. They want us yelling at the liberals, even though if you sit down and actually have a serious conversation with a principled liberal, not just someone who's, you know, voting D or voting blue, but someone who actually believes in the values that they have in their liberal party, you will find that you probably agree on about 50% of what's going on. And it's those wedge issues that the politicians use to keep us apart and keep us pitted at each other's throats. And that causes the cognitive dissonance, because now you're fighting with your own conscience. And it causes the fear, and the fear is paralyzing, so you disconnect and you just do what you're supposed to do, the minimum thing, show up every 2 or even every 4 years and pull the lever for the team that you identify with without giving it much further thought because it's too frightening. And that's where they're getting us.
Yeah.
Well, the thing
well,
is,
if they hadn't done that in Tampa, I would probably be voting for Romney. But when he did that, I said I'm not going to vote for him. But I still, the thing that's you know, I know that my vote probably is not going to make much difference, but I'm not going to vote for Romney. I'm not voting for Obama. So, you know, my choice is, you know, in Texas, for instance, I just found out today that for sure Ron Paul will not be able to write his name in and count it, you know, be counted. You know, I found that out today, and I was, like, so disappointed. Because, I mean, at least Ron Paul, I mean, I appreciate that so much that he got that started. And then Gary Johnson, I really like some of his. The main thing that I can't get, you know, really comfortable with is the thing about immigration. So, you know, I don't know. I like him, but I don't feel like he has enough momentum going at this stage of the game to help. And
Mary, I would say, you know, I'm in the same state, and so, you know, I'm facing the same issue.
Right.
I have not voted yet, and I have not yet decided what I'm going to do. I actually drove down to go to early voting, and the line was wrapped around the building twice. I was like, you know, this is ridiculous. I'll just go, like, on a Tuesday or something when no one's here. I went on Friday. And I still, you know, I go back and forth as to what I'm going to do. But, you know, my thought is this. Look, I'm just one person in a sea of votes.
Right.
And the most important thing for me to do is to find the candidate that most represents what I believe and go vote for them. So as I was heading to the polls, I was doing all these sort of thoughts, which was, you know, I would like to go write in Ron Paul. But in Texas, that vote, they don't do anything with it. But I thought, well, so what? You know, at least I still voted for the person that I believe in. And then, of course, as I, you know, got closer, then I changed my mind. I was going to vote for, you know, I thought, well, more third party people are going to vote for Gary Johnson because he's on the ballot. So maybe that's the way to go. And then there's writing in Virgil Good. You know, what am I going to do? And I still haven't resolved it because I ended up walking away from the polling booth. But, you know, what I think I'm going to do is just look, irrespective of the system that has, you know, this sort of Rube Goldberg machine, the Skinner box that they've selected where I have to be the mouse that goes out and selects their piece of cheese. What is it that I actually want, right? And that's what I'm going to go vote for, irrespective of what they say. But the interesting thing about this is, as I studied my ballots, I printed out my sample ballot, and I went through, and wherever it said Democrat, I crossed out Democrat. And there's four parties on my ticket, four listed parties, the Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, and Green Party. And so wherever I saw Democrat and Green Party, I scratched that off, and then it's between the Republican and the Libertarian Party. And for the first time in my life, on the down ballot stuff, I went and I actually looked up what the Republican stood for and what the Libertarian stood for. Now, some of the candidates who are Libertarians who are running, I couldn't get any information on them. So they didn't actually.
Same thing.
Say anything.
I did the same thing, and you can't find them.
Yeah.
They don't have websites or anything.
Yeah. And so I figured, well, you know, if you didn't even do the basics of setting up like a website where you said what you support, I can't buy a pig in a poke, right? So I'll go with the Republican on that one. Even in some cases, I'm like, I don't, you know, fully like everything about this person, but the other person, I don't know what they stand for. But in several cases, I found some Libertarians who had some information about what they stood for and what they were going to do, and I thought they had a really good, valid points, and I like everything they stood for, and I was like, I'm not voting for the Republican, I'm voting for the Libertarian down ballot. And for me, this is what the Republican Party has done to itself, you know, this time. I would normally go in, and whoever was the Republican, you know, boom, I'm voting for the Republican. But now, I just don't trust the party anymore, you know, and this gets back to that idea, that concept of brand destruction, and that's what I think the Republican Party has done to itself this election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Texas, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Now, here's the interesting thing. Number one, we all should have, even though we didn't know because our minds are managed by the media, we all should always be looking at all the candidates, even if we tend to gravitate towards one party or another. And you don't want to make the mistake now of going to an alternate party and just supporting the party, especially a party like the Libertarian Party, because the Libertarian Party is very broad in its views because it is libertarian, and you have liberal libertarians, you have conservative libertarians. And so you've really got to look at the candidates individually. But what I will say, when you mentioned, you know, what does it matter if I write in Ron Paul, they don't count the vote. Well, I got to tell you that in most places, it doesn't matter if you vote Romney or Obama. They don't count the vote. So vote your conscience, because that's the way that we, A, empower ourselves, because you are how you act, okay? You are how you act. So if you act like a slave who's going to vote for a brand as opposed to principles, then you are that. So you go vote the principles.
Exactly. And, Rex, I would say, look, you know, if you feel like, well, they're not going to go count my vote, they're just going to put it for who they want. Well, okay, maybe they do that. But you can make the fraud that they have to commit be so big that it's so obvious that that's what they did that you can cause the change that you want. So, for instance, if you look at what happened in Tampa, we came so close, we may actually have even had it, a brokered convention, and yet the shenanigans that they had to pull to prevent that from happening were so glaringly obvious and so big that it just pointed out what a fraud the whole thing is. And that's what you want to have happen.
Well,
you
that's
everyone knows
what
they steal.
It did to me. I mean,
from
y'all's show and listening and then talking to different delegates. And I mean, that's exactly what it did to me. It made me think these people are just liars just like the other people. And that's the thing that's been so... I've been so unhappy about is because the more I learn about it, I just feel like the Fed and all those corrupt guys that are somehow connected with the Fed, that no one knows who they are, that they're just running everything. And Soros is in there somewhere. I don't know how he fits into the picture, but, you know, I just feel like, I mean, the more, I mean, it's everything I read now, if I, like, read anything, it all ties back to that, and I just...
You're awake. You're awake,
yeah,
Mary.
I am.
Sometimes it's uncomfortable.
Totally,
it's uncomfortable to wake up. You want to hit that snooze button, go back to sleep. It's just warm and comfortable in there, and just, you know, go vote Romney and pretend everything's okay and be a Republican. It'll be easier. No one will hassle you.
I know.
But you're awake, and once you wake up, you can't go back to sheep. That's it. You're awake. You can't do it, because then you will actually be combating your own conscience now that you are awake, and so you have to tell everybody else. But here's the other thing to keep in mind as we're looking at all these alternate parties. It is highly unlikely, although it is possible, and you always have to hold out the possibility, you always have to work hard for the results you want, it is highly unlikely that any of these alternate parties are going to win. But that's not the point. The point is that you want to, as Tex just said, force them to work so much harder to commit the fraud. And two, you can actually give these alternate parties standing for 2014 and 2016 so that we can begin to unravel the duopoly. So if you happen to be in a state where a guy like Gary Johnson is quite popular, that's a good vote. Even if you don't agree with him on some issues, like you mentioned immigration, where you feel that, you know, I don't agree with Johnson's position on immigration. Well, guess what? You don't agree with Obama or Romney either, but you agree with Johnson on far more things than you do with Obama and Romney, which would make him a better vote. But at least you would give the Libertarian Party standing in 2014 and 2016, and like those down-ballot guys that Tex was talking about that he looked at and said, hey, these guys aren't so bad, I'm going to vote for them. They would have a much easier time getting on the ballot in 2014 so that we can start changing Congress and the Senate, okay? And so you have to consider when you're making these votes, yes, you should always vote your conscience. Don't vote for somebody you disagree with, okay? So I'm not saying that if you're looking for an alternate to Obama, Romney, and you're a conservative, don't go vote for Jill Stein, okay? That's not going to work. If you're a liberal, by all means, please vote Jill Stein, because she's actually a liberal where Obama is not. But if you're a conservative, don't do that, because – then you're playing some kind of pragmatic political calculus. What you're actually going to do is empower a party that stands for everything in which you don't believe. But you can vote for Gary Johnson. You can vote for Virgil Goode. You can even give your vote to Ron Paul. And in actually about 14 or 15 states, he's actually totally counted. And in others, you can make him count. If you go to writeinrevolution.com, you can look at the process about how to process your affidavit and send it in to Write In Revolution so that it's recorded and they can follow up with a court case. Now, you know, maybe you don't want to do that, maybe you do, but what I'm saying is if you feel strongly about voting for Ron Paul, vote for Ron Paul. The idea is to make this a big big splash so that other people who believe the things that we believe but may not know what we know will be empowered for 2014 and 2016.
Exactly, but I think right. It's, you're trying to tee it up for 2014 and 2016 at this point.
Right.
You're trying to pump up the volume for the voices that are saying what you want to hear so that we can sort of reap that harvest later on.
Right. Now, I agree with that, but I'm just also at the same time thinking, okay, I don't know that I want to do Ron Paul because Texas, it won't be counted. And if I do that in Texas, then it's almost like I didn't go vote because no one is going to know. Is that true? I mean, is that right? Tex? I mean, like, will they know? No one will know that I voted. I will know that, but if I vote for Gary Johnson,
it'll go under other.
If I vote for Gary Johnson, then at least I know that that'll be counted. If I vote for Virgil Good, now it's a write-in and it's supposed to count, but it's not as.
Yeah, will they?
Yeah, will they count
exactly.
It? Yeah, so
that's
I'm thinking, maybe I
you,
should.
You and I are having the exact same, intellectual conversation with ourselves.
Yes.
My thought is, look, I really like Ron Paul. I want to vote for Ron Paul. The state of Texas has made sure that, I can't. I mean, I can, but they're just going to throw it into other. But if I'm trying to tee things up for 2014, 2016, Ron Paul's not going to be running then. So should I vote for the libertarian candidate in order to have a vote that, at least the state will register or claims that they'll register because I vote on electronic machines, which means whatever happens, my machine's going to be voting Romney anyway because I'm down here in Houston.
I had several people say they went and voted a straight Republican ticket in Dallas and it did it, and it gave them Obama and they about died.
Oh, my God. See, I mean, they're like, the machine wasn't calibrated properly. How screwed up is the code on these machines? Like, I'm not a computer programmer, but I've taken computer programming courses, and it's very hard to screw that up.
Guys, this is great.
Once the program's compiled, straight Republican. Yeah, but it's Obama. What?
This is good news. Look, they're so stupid, and they need to manage so many votes that they're being this obvious about it. Think about it. Everybody who goes in there and votes Romney or Obama and it comes up the opposite is realizing that it's bullshit with these electronic machines. Now, they can give you this whole it wasn't calibrated properly, all that, but come on. I mean, no one's really going to buy that bullshit. We know that these things are rigged. What that's going to inspire, and this is something that every single one of us has to work on. When I say work on, and not just tell other people about it, but actually – contact your state, figure it out, and get it done, okay? We need to go back to pen and paper ballots that
we
are
have
counted
that. We have
in
that.
Public view. You don't. You
no,
don't.
Yeah, but yours goes
you
scantron, don't.
Don't
they?
It's scantron. An optical scan. That's right. You
what?
May write it out on paper, but it is an optical scan into a computer.
They're
all counted by computer. None of the ballots are actually counted as paper ballots. You have to do it. You got to do it. Remember all that crap we had in 2000 with the hanging chads and all that garbage?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were doing punch cards there, and they're like, no, you got to go optical scanner. Well, optical scanner's counted by computer. Rex, so the computer ones where you actually go vote on the computer – they just removed the Scantron intermediary between you and the computer. That's all that happened.
Right.
I want to say, Rex, before we get into that is, look, we all need as a people, as a nation, to start advocating for the type of voting that the U.S. military sets up for the elections it monitors overseas because they set it up in order deliberately to limit cheating and people who should not be voting from voting. Where you go vote, you sign the thing, or you go fill out who you want and then you stick your finger in the ink and all that kind of stuff so you can't come back twice, right? And in the U.S., we didn't used to have the secret ballot. It was public knowledge who you voted for, right? And if you do it that way, it makes it traceable because you can go back later and find your ballot and your neighbor's ballot and you can figure out who's actually passed away. Like, that guy couldn't have voted because he died, Or this person shouldn't vote. They don't even live in this community. And hey, how come my vote was counted differently? Or how come everyone voted this way, but the official count is totally different? If there's accountability in the system, like I mean, if people ask me who I'm voting for, once I voted, you know, I'll tell them who I voted for, right? And I'm not like, oh, I never say who I voted for. I'll tell you who I voted for.
It's a secret.
Yeah. I mean, what's the matter with you? You can't tell people who you voted for? You know, I mean, oh, no, I don't, in case there's some retribution. Well, who's these retributors who are going to come after you, you know? And if they do exist, expose them for doing
exactly
what they're doing. But
because that's corruption.
You know, yeah, exactly, because that's corruption. That's against our American system. But, oh, my God, you know, people can't know. I mean, how many people do you know? You know who they're voting for. You just talk to them, they tell you, right? But because we have a secret ballot, it's not accountable. That's part of the problem. But yet people will tell you. They just don't want to tell all these anonymous people, you know, oh, out there on the Internet. Well, Facebook crap all over the Internet. Everything about you is out there. I mean, who cares? Whatever.
Well, I mean, look, the fact is if you want to keep it private, then you should. But that doesn't mean that the ballot itself needs to be private. And even if it is, even if you insist in your community that you want it private, okay, that's fine. But if you have paper ballots and you have 784 legal registered voters at your precinct, and when they count the ballots, there are 1,254, you know something went wrong.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
They count them and some another anomaly pops up. So even with the machines being, and it's not all of them, but enough of them are rigged to fix this thing, if you have the opportunity to use a paper ballot, even if it's optically scanned, do so. Because at least there is a hard copy available if an investigation is launched, if you think something is wrong and you want to go back and look at it. But in the meantime, you vote the best way that you can this time, but you've got to take the momentum. See, we're now in the last week, okay? This is when, unfortunately, most Americans actually start to pay attention to what's going on. This is the time to talk about it. This is the time to let them know about the corruption at both the RNC and the DNC conventions. It's the time to let them know, especially for, you know, Christian pro-life conservative voters, Romney is not. And if you're voting your conscience, because for you it's not only a civic duty but also a ecclesial duty, then you've got to really think about it. Why are you doing this when you have options? You see, now, if it was true that Romney and Obama are your only two options, then you vote for the one that you think would do the least damage, okay? And I don't know how you would do that calculus, but you would have to.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, you don't have to, because you have, in many places, even if it doesn't count, you can go vote for Dr. Ron Paul, who has delivered 4,000 babies himself. You can vote for Virgil Goode, who is a pro-life vote. So you have options, and that's the important thing to do. So whatever your conviction is, if your conviction is that, look, everything's got to be totally free market, I'm totally for, you know, no government regulation, totally free market, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, I'm an Austrian economist, whatever it is, you got your option. You can write in Ron Paul, you can vote for Virgil Goode, you can vote for Gary Johnson. If that's the principle, those three are options for you. So vote your principles, vote for the Constitution, vote for liberty, and then tell others, because now's the time to do it, because what's going to happen on November 7th after all the hype and the media buzz and all the chitter-chatter bullshit, people will start to forget about it, and then they'll just go along with their lives and say, yeah, it's all screwed up, it's corrupt, screw it. I'll pay attention again in 2 or 4 years. Get active now. Get them involved now, because we have a lot of work to do between now and 2014. Go ahead, Dex.
And the most important thing, Mary, is, you know, look, when you sort of wake up to all of this and, you know, geez, when did I wake up to all of this? I don't know. Six years and counting, I guess, something like that. You know, there's a temptation to just screw it, I'm not going to participate anymore, it's corrupt, and I don't care. And actually, when I left D.C., that's where I was. I was just, you know, who cares? I can't do anything about it. You know, I'm just one person, and you know what? I'm just going to go do my own thing. I'll just turn my back on it, and whatever. This has been going on since the beginning of time, and, you know, I'll be okay anyway. But the thing is, I care, you know, so I guess you might say that's a character flaw, that's a strength, depending upon how you look at it, but I actually care. So the thing is, you can't get so overwhelmed by how corrupt it is that you drop out, because that's what a lot of people are doing, and that's what's really hurting the country, because nobody's really bought into the two-party duopoly anymore, right? Back in the 1880s, 80% of the people actually voted, right? Or the people who were eligible to vote at the time, because, you know, there's all sorts of restrictions on who could and couldn't vote. But the people who were able to vote then, they all primarily voted. Everyone in America who's eligible should be voting in these things, because I don't think that there actually is that much support for these two freaking parties. I think that a lot of people believe a lot of different things, and they have support for a bunch of different parties. And we need to go support those parties, and other people who have dropped out, re-inspire them, because they may have dropped out thinking, well, it doesn't really matter, they're going to do whatever they want. Well, at this point, the economy is doing so bad and the nation's doing so bad that you can't afford to drop out. Now it's rolled up on your front door. Your neglect has affected us all. They can no longer neglect what's going on. And so we need to get back into the habit of having conversations. You know, when I was growing up, born in the 70s, so I was growing up, and everyone said, well, we'll never talk about politics, never talk about religion, and don't talk about the Vietnam War, right? You know, I didn't even know what the Vietnam War was. I was a kid, right? And nobody really talked about the Vietnam War until the movie Platoon came out. But you have to have these conversations, right? Because these are the conversations that matter. And so people are saying, well, don't go have the conversations that matter. Well, how's that worked out for the country? Since we stopped talking about all these things about in the 70s, how's the country been doing? It's been getting worse because we all stopped talking about it. And we all start being in the, well, as long as I'm doing better, my income's a little higher this year than it was last year, then, you know, my TV is bigger than it was before. So I guess everything's okay. But it's not okay.
Yeah, but I wish there was some way that we could get the media. I mean, I wish we could get, like, the information, like, locally. Because, you know the people that are talking locally because you know those people. So, like, if they're telling you something that's going on or whatever, if somehow it could be, like, you know, directed direction instead of, like, because you hear it from the, you know, from Washington and these people that you don't know and you don't trust and more so I don't trust. And so that's, I think, a big part of it, too.
Well, you know, another thing is people are, they're still wedded to the, you know, the medium is the message, right? So people are still wedded to getting things via television. Television is an entirely passive experience where you receive information and you have no power to object to or send feedback to the information that you're receiving. That's why my television is hooked up to my computer. And, I go get media. I can go watch any, you know, television clip for the most part that's out there, you know. And then I can interact with it as well, right? I can share it with people, Facebook, blog, and I can do all this kind of stuff. There's things like this, you know, radio show, among others. So a new media is emerging that is interactive, where you do have a voice. And so I think television is one of the worst inventions that we had for democracy because it all became about the person who controls the microphone gets to shout everyone down. Well, that's finally changing. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting back to where the country used to be, which is all this sort of pamphleteering type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we can do that, and you are right in your local community,
you know
we can
the
all
people.
Get back
you know if you trust that person that's telling you that stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, if someone's talking in my local community, of course, I'm in a small town, but even I used to live in Dallas, and even in Dallas, I mean, we knew different people that would be talking if they were, like, just so corrupt. We knew that. I mean, it's like, and you'd know people, and you knew how they lived, and you knew who their friends were, and you knew all that. So there wasn't any hiding or, you know, trying to act like there was something they weren't. I mean, you knew, and so you either you believed them or not at that point, you know, whether you're going to listen to them or not. Well, when you branch out even further, like we do now, to get our information, then you don't know those people. You don't, so, and they don't, they can lie, and it doesn't matter, because no one knows, I mean, no one, they don't have to look you in the face on Sunday at church and tell you, you know, I just told you a lie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like you may never see those
people. Well, exactly.
People,
that's why, you know, the greatest library of information ever created in the history of mankind is at everyone's fingertips in the form of the internet. The problem is that, you know, there's an element of the internet, which is pranksterism. First people don't use it, so they don't want to research because, it hurts my head, and I don't really understand all this kind of stuff. Well, you could learn it all if you sat down and figured it out, or just pick an issue that you're interested in and start, you know, pulling on the threads, like you're pulling on a thread of a sweater, and eventually you'll unravel what's going on there, and you'll understand it, and you'll be an expert in it. And then, of course, there is the difficulty that you're pointing out is who do I trust? There is an element of pranksterism in the internet where, you know, people will go in and they'll put false facts and that kind of thing, you know, sort of the Ward Churchillization of the internet. But, you know.
They do the same thing on TV.
Yeah, exactly. They do the same
thing on
TV. You remember? Well, they do the same thing in government. Remember, well, this internet video, which is offensive in every way imaginable. I mean, the most powerful man on planet Earth, supposedly, is running around talking about an internet video on YouTube when we got an embassy in Benghazi that's burned to the ground and a dead ambassador, and the guy, he can't seem to figure out what caused it. You know, and his whole administration is married to this point. So it's not just the internet that'll lie to you. Anyway.
Yeah.
That is so sad. That whole thing is very sad. I mean, and you hear that interview that's been on the internet with the dad talking, and your heart just, like, it's just crushed over it.
Mary, the thing about it is this story actually was exposed. But this crap happens all the time, and the media covers it up, and the narratives play out the way they should. We only hear about it when it falls apart because of a mistake. And I believe that one of the proposed theories, and I haven't researched this enough to know this is fact, I'm just putting it out there as one of the possible ways it happened, was that the ambassador was supposed to have been kidnapped, and Obama was supposed to come in as the hero like he did with the Osama bin Laden thing and save him. That way he would sail into the election with, you know, good national security creds. But the barbarians that they had do this ended up committing murder, because that's what they do. Barbarians kill people.
Right.
And so then the whole thing got askew. But the fact is that sometimes you will never know what the true facts are, because 95% of our media is owned by the same 5-6 corporations. But here's the thing you have to understand. And actually, in today's gospel reading, it was the blind man who was calling out to Jesus, where he said, you know, Son of David, have pity on me. And when Jesus finally, you know, they were telling him, shut up, stop bothering him, you're just a jerk, you know, and then Jesus actually acknowledged him and said, well, what would you have me do for you? And he said, Lord, that I may see. Okay? So now, if you're a Christian, you know what I'm talking about, and if you're not, the analogy still works, because the fact is that we know deep in our hearts what the truth is.
Right.
And when we see information that fits into reality, we can discern it. The problem is, and as Tex pointed out, when it's a passive media where you are putting your faith in the delivery of the information as opposed to analyzing the information, you will buy the bullshit along with the truth. And that's how they get you. That's how Glenn Beck became so popular. He'd give you 80% truth and then smuggle in that 20% crap, and you wouldn't notice the 20% crap, which is what he was trying to sell you in the first place. That's exactly how they do it on TV. In your heart, you know what's true. You know what happened in Tampa. It's not hidden. And if anybody challenges you on it, just show them the clips. They did it in
the
arrogant.
No
so you know what they did. And if that's how they behave, then you can figure out all their other actions based on that evidence that's in your face. And that's how you have to do it. And then, you know, sources can build up credibility for you. Go ahead.
I mean, they just did that at the convention, but once, you know, they get into the White House, they'll start behaving virtuously, right? And they won't do those types
of
things anymore.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, once
they're in the most powerful office of the land, they'll suddenly turn their backs and become honest, upright people.
Yeah, that's
the guy that robs you.
And then what was that video that came out today that was talking about how he made all that money on the sale of the GM? No, Delphi?
In China.
Yeah, expand on that. Tell everyone about that. That was unbelievable. I mean, I was just like.
It is. Unfortunately, we've only got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah, I know.
So maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll do that on Tuesday. And I do have one more caller to bring in before, and then the text that I need the last 10 minutes to wrap up. But the thing that you have to keep in mind is that the man that robs your house okay, because he's desperate and hungry and all this good stuff. You can take pity on his situation, but his action is still wrong. You don't make that man the sheriff, okay? So Mitt Romney steals the nomination from real conservatives like Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. You don't give him the keys to the kingdom. You shun a guy like that.
Yeah.
And if you're a conservative, that's what you should do. Oh, but Obama's so terrible. Right, Obama is terrible. No one's disputing that. But guess what? If you put a guy in there who's as terrible, but he's on your team, you've done even more harm. You've done even more harm. Okay. We've got a caller from area code 434. If you just want to listen, let me know and remute you. Otherwise, tell us who you are and what's on your mind. 434, go.
What's up, Tex and Rex? My name is Tyler Bass. I am the Washington correspondent for the Internet Chronicle. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing very well. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Well, you know, I appreciate that you guys are celebrating and encouraging people to vote their conscience, because there's just not enough of that. You know, I noticed last caller, and I'm sure many, many, many voters understandably are feeling like if they vote their conscience, it won't matter, especially with candidates where it's just going to be a write-in. It won't even show up as a poll on these television channels. You know, and I would just say, if you're really convinced your vote doesn't matter, then I don't really know why you have a compelling reason not to just vote your conscience. If it is, in fact, all rigged, you know, why not just do it? You know, I mean, you got to vote for these things because there's a personal emotional reason for you, or a personal ethical reason, not because, you know, you think it might show up and make a statement. I mean, because goodness gracious, if you're not in let's say you're like a lot of voters and you're not in a swing state, like you're in, you know, Utah, or you're in New York State, if you're a liberal in New York or you're a conservative in Utah, well, you were already pretty much not doing too much anyway. You know, I mean, it was going to go kind of right.
If you're a conservative in Texas, you know, I mean, might as well vote for conscience, right?
Yeah. You're gonna get your Romney thing. I mean, what's the worst case scenario there? So, you know, what can you do? I just wanted to say I was really glad to see in all the third party debates, whether it be Virgil, Gary, Jill, or Rocky, that all these people were saying, hey, the president has no right whatsoever to imprison people without a trial. And I think that's one thing that all these outsider votes, I hope, can unite on, that is a super bad thing. It's not conservative. It's not liberal. It's just tyranny, you know, straight up. Mm-hmm. I mean, why can our president put us in prison without due process, or assassinate us, as we saw in the case of the Al-Laki kids who were like 16, 15, you know, or whatever. These are kids Obama just straight up killed. You know, these are U.S. citizens. I don't know. If you guys want to comment on the National Defense Authorization Act, unilateral detention and indefinite detention, what that means, how constitutional that is, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts, Tex and Rex.
Well, I mean, first to clarify, the National Defense Authorization Act is required every 2 years to fund the military, because the Constitution prohibits the Congress from having a standing army for a period of more than 2 years. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. The problem with the 2011 NDAA was they stuck in sections 1021 and 1023, very vaguely worded to say that if you have association with terrorists, that you could be picked up as a citizen on American soil and held indefinitely. Now, Obama expressed some problems with that, but he said, well, I'm going to go ahead and sign this thing anyway, but I won't use that power. Well, I call bullshit on that. If you're not going to use the power, then I'm not giving it to you, okay, because it's a dangerous power to have. And this, you know, everybody that's, you know, going rah, 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 Romney, Romney said he would have signed it too as written. And so when you put him in there, he'll have that power.
Oh, yeah.
That
can't
possibly
make
you comfortable.
The reporters at, there were a bunch of, I remember right after the second or the third debate, reporters went up to David Axelrod, who's a senior Obama campaign advisor, and basically asked him, what's up with that? Why are you doing that? And he basically said, well, was there a quote from the debate you're asking about? And the reporters said no. One reporter said no, and he said, well, then, you know, what's the relevance? As if there's some fictional reporter etiquette wherein if the candidates don't discuss it, it's not, you know, it's not relevant.
Yeah, then
what Axe was basically saying is, well, Romney's going to do it too. Well, that's crap. Maybe they're both crap, you know? I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, and yeah. Let's get to TSA and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, that's a terrible idea, you know, what they're doing with TSA. I mean, all this stuff, it kind of starts there and it leads up to it. I mean, to think that this is the solution that America came up with to the problem of hijacked planes is just unconscionable. You know, did nobody think about this, that really this is the best we can do? And then if somebody says anything about it now, oh, they're on the enemy's list? I mean, really, the country is not, it's a sick body right now. You know, it is not thinking clearly, and it is doing things contrary to its nature. And then when people are saying, hey, I think this is really contrary to why we came together as a country in the first place, and I understand that this is a problem, but there are better ways to address it. They're like, oh, yeah, troublemaker. You know, they write that down. Yeah, we'll see you later, troublemaker. You know, I mean, really, this is, you know, getting to be a diseased, you know, host here.
Well, I mean, the TSA situation, I mean, if they were really serious about, and I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, use their grievances against the TSA, fondling people as some excuse to, you know, justify racial profiling. Well, I'll just say everyone out there, you know, who thinks that that's a good idea, I just want to throw out that, you know, who you should really profile for all this stuff about, you know, hijacking planes. You know, let's forget Muslims or any of that or blah, blah, blah. How about just males? Males are much more violent creatures. I mean, God love us. We just can't help ourselves. We're just much more violent. I mean, why aren't men being subjected to this if people want to justify profiling far more than women? And frankly, it would probably offend people a lot less, with like Miss America or whatever showing up on YouTube in tears or whatever, like about being having her privates touched. I mean, if I showed up on YouTube talking about people touching my privates, I'm just saying people would care a lot less. Maybe that's unfair. I'm just
you do have a valid point, but here's the other thing: is that look, there's profiling, and then there's just stupid shit that makes you more compliant, so that you will do anything that an authority figure tells you because they're wearing a badge. Okay, that's what this is about. Because profiling would be about actually doing actual profiles on who is likely to have the interest in blowing up an airplane. Taking grandma's, you know, toe clippers and baby's bottle doesn't do shit to make us safe, but what it does is it makes us all feel that we're doing our part to help the country be safer by complying with men with badges, so that when they come to take our guns or when they decide that the neighbor – and that neighbor, I thought he was a nice guy, but he had one of those yellow snake flags on his car, and I know he said something about end the Fed one day. So that guy is clearly out of his fucking mind, and he needs to be in an internment camp. So please come take him away.
Of security. Look, I'll tell you something. Where I used to work in the government, right, so we came in, we all had badges, right? Okay, so you can't get in a building without a badge, and the badge says various things about you and what – where you can go and all this kind of crap, right? Okay, so in order to prevent the faking of badges, they, as far as I know, they stopped doing this because they now have a different system. But they used to, when you came in, you couldn't just walk in. You couldn't show your badge and walk in. You had to hand it to them, and they would rub it with their fingers so that they could feel that it was actually made of plastic. Okay? Now, I don't know when they started that policy, maybe back in the 50s or something like that. Maybe plastic was, like, new. But plastic's pretty freaking cheap nowadays. I mean, you know, you could just get a credit card or something and, you know, flatten it out and put an image over it or something. But so one day, one dude's doing this to me, and he has this huge gash on his, like, between his thumb and his forefinger. It's just, like, oozing, and he's rubbing my, I'm just like, oh, you know, like, oh, God, I got to go wash this thing. But, you know, it's the illusion of security. Oh, yeah, I got to rub my badge. So, you know, now everyone's safe, you know. Nothing's going to happen here. But it's the same thing with the TSA. And then it's the whole, oh, we are impartial, you know, justice is blind type thing. We will take, you know, the old grandmother out of her wheelchair and all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, at a certain point, you know, I mean, there are things I could say. All right, so let me tell you something. I had a friend. Okay, so passports, right? So you all get a passport,
yeah.
Right? So they're talking about this RFID, whether it was going to be passive or if it was going to transmit, right? So
passive RFID.
Yeah. And he was at the meeting where they agreed that they were going to do the transmitting one. And he was like, why? And they said, well, it increases, you can get through security faster if it transmits. He's like, how much faster? And they, I mean, they calculated, they gave a percentage. And they said, well, it has a point, and I'm not shitting you, a 2% increase in efficiency of whatever. And he's like, well, when a whole bunch of Americans turn up dead in Syria at, like, some kind of cafe, who the hell is going to give a shit about your 0.002% efficiency? How's that going to work out for you? But they approved it anyway.
Yep.
Are you saying he was asked not to come to those meetings anymore.
Well, I mean, hold on, we're in the last 5 minutes,
so I'm going to go ahead and say one last thing. I'm giving you each 1 minute. I'm just letting you know, Tyler, you got 1 minute, and then Mary has a minute, and then Tex and I need the last minute and a half each to close out. So, Tyler, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll make it real fast. You know, you guys, I suspect I'm several kilometers to the left of both of you, but I probably should add, because it is my civic duty to shit on Obama in this circumstance. The man, you know, did in fact write that executive order that one of you referenced about not in fact really wishing to use indefinite detention. But in fact, it was battled in court, and the Obama administration did insist on their right to have this sort of thing, indefinite detention of American citizens. Scary stuff. If you're paleoconservative, if you are libertarian, if you're a Goldwater conservative, if you're a green liberal, if you're a communist liberal, or I guess certain types of communists, not Stalinists, but you know, if you're any of those things, it's bad freaking news, people. And whether you're voting for Good or Rocky or Jill or Gary, you know what I'm talking about. And vote your conscience, everybody. Vote your conscience. Don't care. Just vote your conscience. Thank you.
All right, Tyler, real quick, where can we find you?
Tyler Bass on Twitter. It's my real name.
Tyler.
T-Y-L-E-R-B-A-S-S.
Okay.
T-Y-L-E-R-B-A-S-S.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Call in any time. We appreciate it. And you're absolutely right about the NDAA. Mary, you got something you want to close out with real quick?
Just quickly, I just said that is one of the main bills that really disturbs me. And I'll go ahead and, you know, just say that and pass it on to y'all.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. It's great to see you. And
sure. We'll
be back on Tuesday. Thanks, Mary. Tex, you've got 90 seconds to give us your final thoughts before we're off the air.
Okay, well, you know, I just want to thank all the people who called in, and certainly, you know, new callers, definitely call back. You know, we're trying to grow our base of support, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you're to the left of us. All of us see that we're on the wrong track, and we can probably find points of agreement. But I think one of the things that we really need to look at is that as a country, we need to start voting our conscience, standing up for what we actually believe. Because if you don't like these things, if you don't like the NDAA and all that kind of stuff, at the top of the ticket, you're right, it's very hard to change because of the duopoly. But at the lower parts of the ticket, you can change it. But here's the problem, because you send those people into the dragon's lair, and if they think that you will cave come election day to the powers that be, then what you're telling them is that they have to cave to the powers that be on a day-to-day basis because you don't have their back come election day. And that really is why you need to stand up and start voting for the candidates who actually believe what you believe and not the people that you've been cajoled, threatened, you know, browbeaten or abused into thinking that you have to support. Because even if you get better people and they go to Washington, if they think you're going to sell out at the ballot box, they can't stand up and do what's right.
Right on. Can't disagree with anything you said there. And Tex and I are going to be back, weather permitting, on Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. So watch for us. And please click the follow button in Blog Talk Radio. You'll get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile and affiliated email when we're broadcasting. And also please like our page on Facebook. That's the Tex and Rex Show, and is spelled out on Facebook, and you can catch our updates and broadcast times and all such sort of things there. We really appreciate it. To echo what Tyler said, I think it's very important. He mentioned that whether you're on the right side, the left side, or you transcend the left-right paradigm, that the NDAA is a problem. I'll say this to you. If you're breathing and you're American, this cannot stand. You need to be against it, because as soon as you give government this kind of power, tyranny is only around the corner. And the biggest problem is not these illegal laws, not extra constitutional laws, not rigged voting machines. The biggest problem is you and your neighbor. If you don't stand up, if you don't work together, even if you have disagreements, there are certain fundamental principles on which we agree. Liberty unites us, but we have to be involved. You always have to be vigilant for freedom. It is not something that can be taken lightly, because you will always lose it if you get lax. So the important thing is vote alternate parties, get involved locally, let's get things squared away and straightened up by 2014 and 2016. Whether it's Obama or Romney on November 7th, doesn't matter, because shit's going to get real, things are going to get really screwed up, it's going to be terrible. This is the time to be an American, to stand up, make your voice heard, reclaim your country. This is Texan Rex, signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die. Till next time.